This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Affirm Films and the Kendrick Brothers movie Overcomer, starring Alex Kendrick and Priscilla Shire, rated PG, parental guidance suggested, in theaters August 23rd. More information is available at overcomermovie.com.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Hello, everybody. It is really amazing to me how some people can get away with commentary on the mass shootings and be praised, and other people have reactions to the mass shootings, and they are derided and lied about. And what a study in contrasts. You might have seen that former President Obama posted about the shootings. Remember the days when presidents went off into the sunset after they left office? I miss those days. And I was for those days, even when it was a Republican who left office, because I thought it was classy. You should get out of the way and let the guy in the White House do his job, just like you did your job and your predecessor rode off into the sunset. But it's not like that anymore, because we have a resistance to engage in, at least the left does. Barack Obama talked about Michelle and he grieving with all the families in El Paso and Dayton who endured these latest mass shootings. He talks about the few things we already know to be true. No other nation on earth comes close to experiencing the frequency of mass shootings that we see in the U.S. No other developed nation tolerates the levels of gun violence that we do. Just the same old gun nonsense. Then he says, second, while the motivations behind these shootings may not yet be fully known, there are indications that the El Paso shooting follows a dangerous trend. Troubled individuals who embrace racist ideologies and see themselves obligated to act violently to preserve white supremacy. There, you have to say that, right? Well, fine. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with this man, as I said yesterday, being charged with domestic terrorism. I have no problem with that whatsoever. I don't want those kinds of people going into any store anywhere in America and harming anybody for any reason. But again, we're back to the whole thought crime. And can we talk about the guy in Dayton, President Obama? Because he loved Satan. He did. He talked about it. The guy was a committed leftist. He said he would vote for Elizabeth Warren. He was very pro Bernie Sanders, just like Hodgkinson was. Remember Hodgkinson? Who fired shots at the congressional baseball game and shot Steve Scalise, and Steve Scalise could have died. Remember that guy? He was a Bernie campaign volunteer. And I'm not saying it was Bernie Sanders' fault that these people went violent. But, you know, you only talk about the El Paso shooter. So what about the Dayton shooter? Because he was a committed leftist. I guess that just moveon.org, right? And then he talked about tolerance and diversity and all the rest of the stuff that he always talks about. And you know what? I had 8 years of the man. I don't really want to go into everything that he has to say today. But I contrast this with a story that is just so predictable. There is a state representative in the state of Ohio, where, as we know, one of the mass shootings occurred over the weekend. Her name is Candace Keller. She is a Republican from Middletown, which is about 25 miles southwest of Dayton. She put up a Facebook post. And the headline on the New York Post, and there were other sites as well that had horrifying headlines about this awful lawmaker. The headline was, Ohio lawmaker Candace Keller blames gay marriage drag queen advocates for Dayton shooting. And I thought, there's no way in the world that's true. Nobody in the world said the drag queens caused the Dayton shootings. So let's go to the original, now deleted Facebook post of State Representative Candace Keller, and I will read to you what she actually said. It isn't that long. And then you can decide at the end of this whether or not that headline accurately represents the thrust of what she was trying to communicate. Here's what she actually said. After every mass shooting, the liberals start the blame game. Why not place the blame where it belongs? The breakdown of the traditional American family. Thank you, transgender, homosexual marriage, and drag queen advocates. Fatherlessness, a subject no one discusses or believes is relevant. The ignoring of violent video games. The relaxing of laws against criminals, open borders. The acceptance of recreational marijuana. Failed school policies. Hello, parents who defend misbehaving students. Disrespect to law enforcement. Thank you, Obama. Hatred of our veterans. Thank you, professional athletes who hate our flag and national anthem. The Democratic Congress, many members whom are openly anti-Semitic. The culture, which totally ignores the importance of God and the church until they elect a president. State office holders who have no interest whatsoever in learning about our Constitution and the Second Amendment. And snowflakes who who can't accept a duly elected president. She ends it by saying, did I forget anybody? The list is long and the fury will continue. Now, I read that Facebook post and this is what I take away from it. What she is describing is the breakdown of American society. And in essence, saying in different language what I tried to communicate yesterday, because I think the same way she does, not that you have all of these individual things taking up guns and committing the crime. Clearly, that's not what she was trying to say. What she was trying to communicate is these mass shootings are just a symptom of a broader breakdown of American society. We are becoming more lawless. We are becoming more immoral. It is like a snowball gathering speed down a hill. We all know this. We talk about this on the show every single day. That's what she was saying. But in the leftists' hands, it became drag queen advocates were responsible for the Dayton shooting. I cannot believe that these people are so dim as to miss the point, but they do not let a serious crisis go to waste. Why in the world would you let it go to waste when you can find people who are state representatives whom the most of the country has never heard of and turn them into demons? And that's what they do. And that's why the media largely has no respect from decent American citizens anymore. I think it's despicable. It's despicable. She's right. She's not saying that the individuals like the leftist in Dayton, Ohio, who loved Satan and loved Bernie and would vote for Elizabeth Warren and loved socialism. This is all per his Twitter account before they took it down. You know, should we talk about him? Well, not really. I don't want to talk. I mean, but that's who committed the crime. That's who killed his sister. That's who killed nine people and wounded other people. And then the other guy, if you read his manifesto, you can see plainly that he was not some dyed-in-the-wool conservative. He talked about universal basic income. He talked about environmentalism. He talked about universal health care. He talked about his dislike for the Republican Party because their pro-corporation stance leads to more immigration. I mean, the guy hated everybody. If you read the manifesto, you can read that. But that's not politically good for these people. So they have to find somebody to beat up who's some, you know, Ohio lawmaker who otherwise is just living her life. And of course, she had to delete it. And now people are calling for her head on a platter. It's just despicable. Oh, one more despicable thing I got to get to. Let's play the, I think, most important moment from President Trump's speech yesterday. This is cut one.
The shooter in El Paso posted a manifesto online consumed by racist hate. In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy. These sinister ideologies must be defeated. Hate has no place in America. Hatred warps the mind, ravages the heart, and devours the soul. We have asked the FBI to identify all further resources they need to investigate and disrupt hate crimes and domestic terrorism, whatever they need. We must recognize that the internet has provided a dangerous avenue to radicalize, disturb minds, and perform demented acts.
Okay. Well, now they got this denunciation of white supremacy, and I think the president has always been against white supremacy. The problem is these leftists have always tried to equate the GOP with white nationalism, white supremacy. I fail to see how all of that rhetoric squares with some of the mass violence that we've seen in America from leftists. You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to, you know, 2 + 2 can be 8 as long as they get what they want in the end. That's just how it works. Over at CBS, which had predicted that Donald Trump's remarks wouldn't be that good and the way he speaks is almost identical rhetoric to that of the shooter. I mean, they're saying this kind of stuff via Newsbusters. Listen to what Nancy Cordes of CBS News had to say after Trump's speech. This is cut two.
And he did. At the very top of his speech, he denounced emphatically racism and white supremacy, something that many lawmakers believe is important, but who also feel that it may have come too late. They believe that some of the president's own rhetoric over the past couple of years has normalized the notion of white supremacy in this country. They think he needs to do a lot more, not only to speak out against it, Nora, but also to curtail his own rhetoric.
Yeah, it was Trump's fault. The guy in Dayton was Trump's fault, and the guy in El Paso was Trump's fault, even though even the manifesto writer in El Paso said they're going to blame it on Trump's rhetoric, but I have thought this way for a number of years, and Trump has nothing to do with it. Well, you can't believe a killer. You got to discount that. It's Trump. Trump's fault. There's no forgiveness. There's no redemption. He's evil. Get him out. Put in a progressive. More of the same. A lot to come. Stay with us. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good.
From Affirm Films, Provident Films, and the Kindred Brothers comes Overcomer. John Harrison is a frustrated coach questioning his value until he crosses paths with a student struggling on her own journey.
What have you allowed to define you? When you find your identity and the one who created you, it'll change your whole perspective. You say I'm
loved. Overcomer, starring Alex Kendrick and Priscilla Shirer. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. In theaters August 23rd. More information is available at overcomermovie.com.
If you're a medical professional, here's a way to move from success to even greater significance. Mercy Ships has an urgent need for pediatric registered nurses. You'll be joining dozens of volunteer medical professionals who've been blessed by the opportunity.
I think all nurses should do something like this. To serve the unserved is one of the most beautiful experiences.
Get more information by visiting mercyships.org/nurses. Mercy Ships, bringing hope and healing to the world's forgotten poor.
We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Well, students in Kentucky and South Dakota will soon return to school, where they will see signs posted that say, "In God We Trust." But even though multiple court decisions have affirmed that our national motto is not an establishment of religion, atheists like those at the Freedom From Religion Foundation are irate over what is happening, saying of South Dakota's measure in a statement, "The law, insultingly confusing patriotism with piety, is part of the nationwide legislative push by Project Blitz, which is a stealth campaign to inject religious bills into state legislatures across the country." We're going to talk about this now with Jeremy Dyes, Deputy General Counsel at First Liberty Institute, who explains in a new op-ed at the Daily Wire why these sorts of bans or attacks on this motto are just ludicrous. So great to have you with us, Jeremy. How are you?
I'm doing great. So thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. Tell us a little bit about the history of In God We Trust. I know a lot of us have learned this and knew this back in the day, but there are probably a lot of us who have forgotten the trajectory, which is something you address in your column.
Well, clearly the other side has forgotten the trajectory and the history of this whole thing, and it's a great history in our country. I mean, look, the phrase In God We Trust, if people are reading through all four verses of the Star-Spangled Banner, they'll remember that Francis Scott Key penned in the fourth verse of the Star-Spangled Banner, "And this be our motto, in God is our trust." And what really strikes me about that is to think of how early on in our republic that was written. This is just into the third presidency of this young republic. And even by that time, it could be said that that should be our motto, in God is our trust. You go to 1864, and the phrase appears on our 1 and 2 cent pieces, our coins at that time. And then by 1956, Dwight D. Eisenhower signs a bill to make that the official national motto. And a year later, it's put on all of our currency as well. So this has got a really long history. A big part of our heritage is a phrase like this. In fact, there's even a story that says that Ben Franklin raised up a militia group during the American Revolution, and that was on the battle flag, "In God We Trust." So It's definitely a part of our country. It's tied to who we are, and we shouldn't be afraid of it, but I'm still frustrated by the fact we still got to fight back against it when people get upset by it.
Well, that's what's so interesting. You point out all of these courts that have ruled that this is perfectly constitutional to have "In God We Trust" on our currency and to have a national motto that says this. In fact, every federal circuit court you've said to have considered this has deemed it constitutional. So why is this even an issue?
It shouldn't be. I think it's an issue because the folks like to make it an issue so that they can get another piece of paper that has those words on it to fund their efforts to try to take it off of that very paper, to get it off of there.
Yeah.
So you're exactly right. Look, I think it's now 11 circuit courts of appeal, which includes the district court or the D.C. circuit court. So 11 of the 12 circuit courts of appeal in the United States have actually reviewed this issue. And that includes the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which has looked at this not once, but twice. So back in 1970, in a case called Arenal versus the United States, the Ninth Circuit looked at this case and they said that this phrase in no way concerns or implicates the establishment of religion. I mean, you really can't get much more clear than that. And when the Ninth Circuit saying that, and they had a second chance at the to say, no, we were wrong back in 1970, when they're looking at it again, I think it's 2013. Well, I mean, the Ninth Circuit says it doesn't concern the Establishment Clause. I think we should take that to the bank, that it's not going to violate the Constitution.
Yeah, I think that's well said. The Ninth Circuit is not exactly really on the side of conservatives very often. So that's an important thing to note. This is interesting, though, when you talk about this accommodationism, which I guess has been kind of a theme through these legal opinions about In God We Trust. Can you talk a little bit about that, Jeremy? What is the reasoning of these courts in saying this is not an establishment of religion? This is, in fact, something that is perfectly permissible.
Yeah, at very best, this is a civic religion kind of a phrase. It just reflects sort of it's kind of like saying the pledge or saying singing the Star Spangled Banner. They have religious language inside of them, but they're not really religious. Now, some people will view them as having real particular religious meaning, but that's okay. We're diverse. We're a pluralistic society in which we can have a variety of different understandings and even have a variety of different religious beliefs and still have a common purpose called freedom together. And so what the court is basically saying is, look, this is a longstanding practice of our country. We've been doing this since, we've been a country, much like opening our public meetings with prayer and having religious symbols on our monuments and memorials around the country. It's all part of the same thing. It's part of who we have been, and therefore it's part of who we are. And so to deny that would be to say something else. And I think that's really, frankly, why these legislatures in South Dakota and other places are saying, let's put this back up on our school properties, because we've forgotten what it is, which makes me laugh, because the other side has said, and I'm quoting now, that this is an effort to be exclusionary and brainwash America's school children. Well, I mean, and they're saying that by saying we should exclude this phrase so that the children won't be brainwashed. Well, they themselves are attempting to brainwash them by excluding them based upon inaccurate information. So this is all proving the point that we need to remind ourselves of where we have been, so we know where we are going.
Right. Well, when you look at the word God, that seems to be what they're really annoyed about. And this is interesting, Jeremy, because we've seen all of these wins from the left, all the way back to Madeleine Murray O'Hare and the taking out of a prayer from the public schools and all of these wins that they've had in the courts pertaining to eliminating any mention of Christianity whatsoever in a lot of these schools. Is that really something that they are having a hard time wrapping their heads around? Because the minute they see God, it seems to trigger them, even though this has been a longstanding phrase going back to the 1800s, as you said before.
Yeah, no, I you're right. And I think they know that they are losing and continuing to lose. Look, we just argued on behalf of the American Legion in the Supreme Court of the United States on behalf of the Peace Cross back in June. We got the decision, the American Legion versus AHA case. And the court was very clear on this, to say that if we're going to have governments roaming around the country trying to go on this kind of seek and destroy mission for anything religious, any symbol or monument or activity that is religious in nature in public, that's a hostility towards religion that the Constitution just frankly abhors.
Right.
And so today we have more freedom because of that decision than we've had in decades. And I think the other side knows that, and they're getting pretty desperate about it, quite frankly. There's a case I was just looking at yesterday down in Vero Beach, Florida, where there's this very small cross on top of a Vietnam Veterans Memorial there that they're all hot and bothered about because, well, this is that's 1964, not 1925. Is that old enough to really qualify? Well, of course it is. It's part of our heritage. It's part of what we do to honor people who have died and sacrificed themselves in war. It's not a problem just because it appears in public. What the court has done so well for us is to say, this business about being offended and qualifying for a lawsuit, yeah, that's over. We're not going to allow that anymore. And so what we're hearing right now are the last desperate gasps of death in the overall war against religion in public. And I think the side that you and I believe, are on is winning.
Jeremy, is there any effort, or has there been any effort mounted to change the national motto? Because I could picture one of these activists saying, well, if the national motto is "In God We Trust," and a lot of us don't trust in God, then it's excluding people like me who are not people with any faith in God. Does that make me less of an American? I mean, I'm sure there's some activist who has made an argument to that effect. I'm just wondering if they've ever tried to mount an official campaign to change it.
Oh, my, yes, very much so. And number one, it starts with, first off, make sure we get that three-letter word in the center of that phrase completely out of there. If anything, yeah, they would say, in me I trust, or in nothing I trust, or something like that.
Right.
But they want to make sure that anything that's religious, they've got to hide from public view, or they've got to tear down or desecrate in some manner. But more directly, yes, there's an effort continually underway about trying to replace that phrase with the e pluribus unum, out of many one. Well, there's a reason why we switched from that, or we used that as kind of a casual, national saying of some sort. But there's a reason why we put it back to "In God We Trust," because we want to recognize that there is something greater than the one that is created out of the many. That there is something above our government, even, to which even governmental leaders have to remember they are submissive to as well. That's why our founding fathers, that's why the guys in the 1860s, that's why Eisenhower in 1956, that's why all these different leaders have said, this is actually our national motto. This is who we are as a country.
Yeah. How much of this do you think is part of the continual leftist impulse to try to erase history? Because setting aside the legal, the constitutional arguments over the national motto, the fact is that we are a nation that has a solid Christian foundation. We all understand not everybody was a Christian who founded this nation, but we know the Christian history. They don't want to talk about that. It seems that really is the bigger picture. The bigger overall trajectory is they want to erase any sort of connection of the United States of America and its founding in any way, shape, or form to Christianity.
If the left is going to have its nirvana of being a government that controls every aspect of your life from the cradle to the grave, providing you health care, providing you everything, right, and kind of directing your life, well, they can really have no competition to that authority.
Yeah.
And the mere recognition that there is a divine being that governs the affairs of men, that directs the hearts of kings, as Scripture talks about, then that's a competitor that the left has to eliminate wherever they possibly see it. And so I think that is the motivation, largely, maybe not by all, but by quite a few, to make sure that they whitewash over any kind of religious displays in public, any religiously expressive symbols or activities in public, because they can't allow any, even the most nominal recognition that there is a higher being that governs the affairs of men.
Absolutely. And this is such an important point for us to remember. We have been so accustomed to seeing the attacks on any mention of Christianity in the public schools that we're often too willing to concede territory when courts have spoken in this way. Jeremy Dice from First Liberty Institute. You can check out his piece at the Daily Wire. Thanks so much, Jeremy. This hour of Janet Mefford Today brought to you by Affirm Films and the Kendrick Brothers movie Overcomer, starring Alex Kendrick and Priscilla Shire. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested in theaters August 23rd. More information is available at overcomermovie.com. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Affirm Films and the Kendrick Brothers movie Overcomer, starring Alex Kendrick and Priscilla Shire, rated PG, parental guidance suggested, in theaters August 23rd. More information is available at overcomermovie.com. back on Janet Mefford today. I think every Christian parent would agree that our role in our children's lives is not to be their best friend when we're raising them. That is, we don't operate in a way that always makes them happy and like us a lot. But we also don't want to be adversarial all the time. So the question becomes, is there another way? We're going to talk about that today with Bert Folks. He is a former teacher who has 30 years experience working with kids. He's the founder and co-director of Empty Stone Ministry, a Christian nonprofit that ministers to drug addicted youth. And today we'll be talking about his book called X-Planned Parenting, Become Your Child's Ally, A Guide to Raising Strong Kids in a Challenging World. Bert, it is great to have you with us today. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. All right. The first question, I guess, very obviously, is what's an X-Plan? I'm sure that's what everybody is asking right now. X-Plan, what is that all about?
Oh, it's so fun. The name of that, it gained a ton of popularity from a blog I wrote a couple of years ago. And the premise of that is something that we've established for our youngest son. And the notion was if he was out and found himself in a situation where he didn't feel safe, he could text anyone in our family the letter X, and that's all. And then whoever got the message would call him and say, hey, something's come up. We're picking you up in 5 minutes. Be ready to go. So it was kind of our rescue plan that could get him out of the sticky situation. And allow him to save some face with his friends as he grows and develops, and we teach him to navigate those waters.
Right.
So that it grew out of that, basically. But the funny thing was, there was a whole philosophy behind just the letter X. It wasn't, you know, just a random letter. We picked that for a purpose. And one of the things is, you know, one of my cornerstone of what I believe as far as parenting, our role is to help kids figure out who God made them to be. Mm-hmm. You know, so the X is that algebraic unknown. It's the mystery we're all solving for. So who is this kid? So that's what we're constantly asking as parents. The other part of the X is the idea that we're on different journeys. You know, I'm one leg of the X, my kid's the other leg, and where we meet in the middle, that's our point where we come together. So it's about traveling that journey.
Right.
Third thing, the X, hey, Christ, you can't do this without God.
That's right. Yep. Yep. That's good. Now this was interesting because when you talk about this post that you did a couple of years back, not everybody liked what you had to say. Why was that? What kind of feedback did you get from a negative perspective? People who read it and said, well, wait a minute, I don't know if I'm on board with this.
Oh, it's really the biggest contention of pushback was that there would be no questions asked. You know, if you need picked up, we'll get you. We're not going to hound you with questions. And that sat hard with a lot of people.
Yeah.
I get that.
Right.
Totally get that. But what you're really going for is developing a trusting relationship with your kid. You know, you develop a healthy, trusting relationship, you won't need to ask questions. They will come to you and talk about it. That's the beautiful thing.
So it was a different strategy. It wasn't so much that you were against knowing what was actually going on in your son's life. It was that you wanted to build some respect and trust with your child such that he could come to you and tell you. Has it worked out that way in his life?
Absolutely. And it's funny, just 2 days ago, there had been something that he and I had been discussing. And he came to me the day after our discussion, and he said, Dad, what I said to you wasn't totally accurate, and I kind of tweaked the truth a little bit here. And he totally came up and offered that. So, yeah, you know, you start nurturing and developing that kind of relationship. You give them some freedom to screw up and take some risks and make some mistakes. Man, but they got to know that you've got your back. You know, you've got their back.
Yeah.
They will come to you. They will talk to you.
Well, and I would imagine that for a lot of Christian parents who are listening, they're saying, but wait a minute. Okay, if you have a situation where your child is out at a party that maybe he wasn't supposed to be at and there's underage drinking, that's a no-no. Of course, we don't want our children involved in that kind of situation. Isn't it the responsibility of the Christian parent to know what was going on and to say, hey, son, you shouldn't have been there in the first place. We're glad that you got out of there. But, you know, what about the moral lesson when you're trying to also be a good parent? How do you navigate that?
One of the things is definitely, I think that's going to come up in the discussion.
Yeah.
You know, I think the kid's going to bring that up at some point, and it gives you the opportunity to talk about it. Now, I will say, and of course, that whole idea of that blog post, that's of such a minute portion of the book itself.
Yeah.
But the caveat that we always put out there was, if we come to get you and you're in a dangerous situation, you are your brother's keeper. If anyone else is in a dangerous situation, you have to speak. You have to speak up so we can contact other parents, so we can go look into it, whatever it is.
Right. So you're also trying to teach responsibility to your son along the way. You're not just saying, I'm never going to ask any questions. I don't want to know anything that's going on. That doesn't seem to be the rationale that you're operating under, that you just want to let him do what he wants and you don't want to know anything.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's a beautiful way of putting it. The whole premise of my book is, raising strong kids, helping them develop their identity to know who they are, so they can stand firm in a very tough world. And I really believe one of the ways that we gauge our children's strength is we see it in their empathy for others, in their heart for others. I call empathy the fuel gauge of a strong heart. So as a parent, I look at my kids and I think, okay, what's their capacity to love people, to care for people? And that gives me an idea of how we're doing on this journey.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you hear so many stories, Bert, about Christian parents who did the very best that they could with their kids and they fell away from the Lord or they got involved in all sorts of things they shouldn't have done. And the Christian parents say, but we did this and this and this. And then you'll talk to the kid and the kid will say, it was such an oppressive household and there was too much heavy-handedness. Is this in a way a response to what you have seen as too much heavy-handedness? Christian parents who might mean well, but it's backfiring because they were too oppressive with their kids?
In some cases, possibly. And of course, I hate to generalize anything like that because, I have seen kids come out of very, very strict households and they are leading very loving, life-filled, Christian-led, Christ-led lives.
Yes.
So I hate to generalize anything like that. I think the thing that I really try to get at in this book is I try to get parents to consider the places in their lives where they are still broken, where they still need healing. Because I think a lot of times our brokenness and our feelings of, not having what it takes, not being good enough, whatever else, man, that really taints how we raise our kids. So as parents, we need a ton of healing still. And I focus on that quite a lot in the book because I think a lot of times we wound our kids through our own brokenness without ever even realizing it.
What kind of brokenness do you refer to when you're thinking of parents who still need healing in their own lives? What have you seen?
I can use myself as an example. There's a story I tell in the book where my oldest son, who's actually getting married next week, when he was 6 years old and he wants to play baseball, I'm in the backyard with him, just passing ball with him, trying to get him ready for tryouts. I wouldn't let him quit until he had 10 perfect catches and throws. We were out there until dark. Tears, whining, crying. That had nothing to do with him. That had everything to do with my brokenness. And I relate that to a story of when I played football. And I was a young kid when I got to play football for the first time. And I didn't know what I was doing. And I remember the first game I got in, the coach grabbed my face mask and dragged me around the field as he screamed at me for my mistake.
Bert, hang on a second. I hate to break things here, but we've got to pause for a quick break. Bert Folks, his book is called X-Plan Parenting. We'll pick things up on the other side. Come back with us right after this. Janet Mefford today is proud to partner with Preborn to help save babies' lives.
Well, my name is Dan Steiner, and I'm the president of Preborn. Ultrasound truly is a game changer. When a mom comes into a pregnancy center under pressure to abort her child, perhaps the dad's gone, perhaps her mother is pressuring her. Most of the time in her heart, she doesn't want to abort, but what she needs is something that will give her the strength to choose life against the pressures that are forcing her to consider abortion. That's the ultrasound. If she hears her baby's heartbeat and sees that baby on ultrasound, everything's different.
Will you join us in saving babies' lives? Preborn funds pregnancy centers across the nation so they can offer free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. Ultrasound is a game changer because when abortion-minded women actually see their babies in their wombs for themselves, 80% of the time, they choose life. Would you please join us at Janet Mefford today to support the ministry of Preborn? For $140, you can provide 5 free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. A gift of $22 will provide 1 ultrasound, and every gift helps. To donate, please call now, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your gift goes directly towards saving babies. You can get involved, and you can help save a life for a gift of $140. 5 free ultrasounds will be offered to women in crisis pregnancies. Let's do more than talk about abortion. Let's save some lives. Please call now with your gift, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-BABY. 855-402-2229. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. We are back on Janet Mefford today. My guest, Bert Falks, he is founder and co-director of Empty Stone Ministry and author of X-Planned Parenting. We're talking about the book and becoming your child's ally and raising strong kids in a challenging world, which is always something that we all strive for as Christian parents. You said something really interesting, Bert, before we had to go to the break. You were talking about the fact that oftentimes when we make mistakes in parenting, it's because parents are dealing with their own issues and perhaps projecting them onto their kids, and that's where we can really mess up. And you were talking about your own experience as a kid with sports, with football in particular, and how that impacted the way that you were dealing with your son and requiring him to have so many perfect throws when you were out playing baseball with him. Wanted to let you finish that story and kind of finish making that point, because I thought that was a really good one.
Sure, thank you. Like I said, as a kid, the coach grabs my face mask. He drags me around the field, and I was humiliated. And just, I was so broken inside. And a couple weeks later, I quit football. That was buried deep in me. And I made a secret vow that day that I didn't realize until years later as an adult, that I would never be unprepared again.
Oh, wow.
And that could become a heavy burden to bear. And that was really affecting how I was parenting my kids. I drove them so hard to do everything right and to be ready. And I thought, okay, my son's got to be ready for tryouts because I don't want him to ever feel what I felt. That's horrible.
Yeah.
That's terrible parenting. But our own brokenness gets in the way so much of our relationships with our kids. So as parents, we got to go back in our stories to figure out where we kind of got pulled off track so we can help our kids find the path that was made for them. And I really believe every kid comes into the world with something unique, something special. God made them to bring something that no one else can bring. And it's our job as parents to help them find that path.
That's great. Well, and you see this in a lot of areas. I think a lot of times people will notice with fathers in particular, there's this desire to have a sports star for a child. And maybe it's because dad was a sports star, and maybe it's because dad wasn't a sports star. And moms will have other problems, and there's academic pressure on kids. I want to have the smartest kid. I want to have the most achieved, kid in the universe and all this kind of stuff. And you really are looking at your kid as living out, you're living your life vicariously through your children. How do you back off from that, though? Because you obviously realized the error that you were making and said, listen, I want to become my child's ally. I don't necessarily have to turn my child into the perfect child. Not that there is one anyway. What woke you up, and how do you get other parents to wake up to that and correct it and really see those children that God has given to us as created in His image with His own talents and gifts given to them that they need to discover, and we need to give them the freedom to discover them?
I think of a lot of parents, and I know I'm willing to bet that most, if not all, of your listeners are on social media, and they probably post stuff about their kids. Go look at your Facebook posts about your kids and see how many of them are related to some kind of a performance, whether it's sports or academics or whatever else. I think a lot of times we damage our kids through our praise, and our kids start to equate their performance with their value.
Yeah, they do.
And that's two totally different things. You know, and as parents, we got to encourage our kids to take some risks in life, teach them that it's okay to fail. Failure's great. We all fail, and we all learn from it and grow from it. You know, you look throughout the Bible, you know, all the Bible heroes were pretty big screw-ups and failures.
Sure.
You know, they're great redemption stories, because sometimes it wasn't the performance that mattered, but the person.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to instill in our kids. You know, I'm not celebrating your performance. I want to celebrate you, because you're awesome. You bring something special. I love your heart. I love your empathy for others. I love your sense of humor. You know, whatever it is, your kid shines. You know, we need to celebrate who they are much more than their performances.
Well, that is really important. Absolutely. But how do you see the role of straight up discipline and correction when the Bible talks about you don't exasperate your children, bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, Ephesians 6:4? We do have that role as well when our children are young and we have to discipline them at times and instruct them and correct them. How do you do both? How do you navigate both of those responsibilities to become your child's ally and give that freedom and embrace them as the people God created them to be, but also make those corrections that are necessary for being a good parent and creating a future good adult?
One thing is, and this is from an old, this is something we learned as teachers, you know, because I have a background in teaching. You want to provide more guidance and structure early on, and then you can lessen up on the reins as they grow.
Sure.
I've seen a lot of parents who kind of let kids just run wild when they're young, and then they find themselves in crisis mode later, and then it's like trying to stuff a genie back into a bottle when they try to, you know, throw in some discipline. That's hard. So you know, you got to start young in nurturing some self-discipline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and kids learn far more from what we do than what we say. So the big thing is, what are we modeling for our kids?
Right. And they're very, 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 very quick to see when you are falling short of what you're telling them to do. But mom, you did X, but dad, you don't follow that sort of thing.
And Oh, yeah.
But it's also not a bad thing, I think, as a parent to say to your child, I messed up too. Sorry, I'm not perfect. I'm telling you what we all ought to be, but I have to, you know, I'm a sinner as well. I need God's grace and forgiveness too, just as much as you do.
There have been times, and I'm getting so much better at this, thank God, because that's a reflection of the healing that I continually go through in my life, because you know, God's not done with me. I've still got a long way to grow. But there are many times I'll go to my kids and I'll say, I'm sorry for how I handled that. I make mistakes, you know, and it's good for kids to see that.
Well, it is. So when you're implementing the X plan, as you mentioned at the outset of the show, that you have your child, if he's in a bad situation, just text an X and then, you know, no questions asked, mom and dad come. How has that changed things for your child? What kind of long-term effect has implementing that plan made for your family? Like, how well does it work? I think a lot of people would want to know.
For us personally, it really hasn't changed our family, because it was really just a natural outgrowth of how our family functions. You know, we have a really pretty good relationship with our kids. We're pretty open and honest with each other. However, I've heard from parents from all over the world who went to their kids and said, hey, I read about this X-Plan thing online. And then they contacted me and said, oh, we had a beautiful conversation about sex, drugs, whatever, that we've never been able to talk about before. So the thing is, you know, when kids know that you're not trying to be heavy-handed, you're not trying to come at them and trick them, when kids know you genuinely care about them, man, that goes a long way into building those bridges. And that's what I talk about. You want to be your kid's ally, but not their friend.
Yeah.
I mean, if you need your kid to be your best friend, you need some actual friends. Don't pin that on your kid.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's exactly right. I always say this every time I get on an airplane. I see bad parenting in action. And, you know, little kids who just, they're running the show. Mom's not running the show. And I do think about that. I think, how are those kids going to turn out? Mom can't even handle them at 2 and 3. What are you going to do when they're 15 and 17 or 16?
Oh, I know. It's kind of sad in a lot of ways, but, you know, I have a lot of faith, and I pray all the time that kids are flexible and strong enough that most of them will survive in spite of what we do to them.
Boy, isn't that true. Boy, isn't that true. And love goes a long way. And that's what's coming through when I'm listening to you talk about this and going through your book, Bert, and that is you want to have long-term this relationship of love and trust with your kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. None of us get it all right. You know, and that's why, you know, I say in the book at one point, I don't write the book as a how-to. You know, I really wrote the book to open parents to a lot of new questions, to think about themselves and their own journey and their own relationship with Christ, because that's going to impact your relationship with your kid on that journey you're taking together.
That is a really important point, and people can read about it. X-Plan Parenting is the name of the book, Become Your Child's Ally, A Guide to Raising Strong Kids in a Challenging World. And so good to have with us its author, Bert Folks. Bert, thank you so much for being with us. Really enjoyed the book and enjoyed talking to you.
Hey, thank you so very much, Jan. I really appreciate it.
Oh, God bless you. Thanks so much, Bert. And thanks for being with us. Thank you. And thanks for being with us on Janet Mefford Today. We'll see you next time.